What up? Pat Mayo here. Just want to let all you golf heads know, if you're looking for the final bets for the Memorial, plus the DraftKings ownership and the weather report, that is over on the Daily Fantasy Sports Picks and Bets The Mix podcast feed. I've dropped the links to subscribe in the description of this podcast, so go check that out. There's French Open picks on that feed every single day. The Euro bets are up there right now, and we're going to have a ton of MMA and soccer coming up, all short-form content. So now that we're heading full-time into football, that is where you'll hear the Wednesday Golf Bets Show. Plus, you can just watch it at any time on Mayo Media Network's YouTube channel. So if you have not subscribed to that, please go subscribe right now, okay? Let's get to football.
Mayo Experience.
Pat Mayo Experience! Welcome to the Pat Mayo Experience, presented by DraftKings. Today, we're doing it. We're getting into the full-fledged 2021 fantasy football season team-by-team breakdowns. Which guys are going to be fantasy relevant this year? Which guys should you draft from these teams as we go through division-by-division? And then hopefully I'll be able to use all the information once we get through all of the teams in order to make my rankings. And I'll make those special shows where me and a guest will go through each of the players and actually put them into tiers. And then I will cobble together my top 150. Then all of a sudden we got a great big show and then drafts are coming up. And I just enjoy the kickoff to fantasy football season. But I'm not losing yet. And I'm still winning. Jake Seeley from TheAthletic.com is joining me to break down each of these teams. What's your favorite point of the fantasy football preseason? Because week to week, it's like a grind. It's a real job. But right now, like, everything is possible in terms of fantasy football. There are bad predictions. But nothing is wrong as of yet, which is great.
Everything's great. And, you know, I see the potential for, you know, drafting super early like people right now. And because you know more than most people and you get that advantage of values in the 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th round. And then the counter argument to it is, well, then you don't have, you know, have injuries that could pop up or cuts or situations that we didn't expect. So I see both. But my favorite part, and this isn't just because of like the flex leagues or whatever, it's that first week of August. It's that first weekend where it's the Hall of Fame game that we don't really care about, but we know it's the kickoff the preseason. It's August. We're starting to draft. That's really kind of still early for drafts, but it's that initial August starts, and it feels like it's that first day of summer. It's the first day of winter for Christmas coming, that type of stuff. It's just that first moment of like, hey, it's here. We're finally made it, and it's all the excitement. And then the entire month of August is fun.
I have a gigantic announcement coming soon related to fantasy football season. Actually, I have like three giant announcements. One is bigger than the rest. One could be something that involves you, the viewer out there. If you've ever wanted to get into the fantasy football space and host a show like the Pat Mayo Experience. Now, it wouldn't be the Pat Mayo Experience, but I might have some opportunities arising for football season. So you're going to want to stay tuned to that. Some people know what it is already because they listen to like a past show on the Corona Cast where Davis and I talk through what the potential plan is. I should have some more details towards the middle of June as this goes along. Could be a Bachelor style show, Jake. What do you think about that?
Do I get to be the Bachelor? Is that what you're telling me?
No, I mean...
That's the only way I would get a date.
Maybe that's the only way you get a date, but in this realm, maybe it's more like The Voice. I don't know, or American Idol. Maybe you could be one of the judges.
I wouldn't have no problem doing that. I think the people in America's Got Talent are too soft. Letting all these joke acts through, honestly.
I don't know. Maybe you're too harsh to be a judge. I don't know. Anyway, I have an awesome, put it this way. If you like projections and you like customizable projections where you can really dictate what you want to do with each of the games and what did those numbers end up telling you, you have nothing to worry about because Pat Mayo's got you covered on this front. So a huge announcement coming very soon. So follow me at the PME on Twitter and you will find it all up there. Let's jump into this. Dallas Cowboys, who you got? NFC East is where we're starting. Dak Prescott is back after, you know, not playing most of last year. He was the number one fantasy quarterback by the time he got hurt. If you only look weeks 1 through 4, he was number one QB if you did points per game. And I think that points per game is probably a better measuring stick rather than total fantasy points for a season. It's like when people use yards per carry as a fantasy stat. It's like, yeah, it's not really telling me much, man. You need to tell me more than that.
I just had a huge argument with one of my buddies at lunch on Friday. We were talking about, because it started with Najee Harris and that he wasn't a believer in Najee Harris. And I said, I put it right here on the table. He rushes for 1,200 yards this year. He's like, how many carries? was like, it doesn't matter. Like, he was, well, if he only averages 3 yards a carry, I was like, you realize yards per carry is like one of the worst stats to value anybody. Like, I understood where he was coming from, but I'm with you. Yeah. Honestly, points per game is, I'm trying to think like of a good comparison. Like, if that's almost like the college level. So like high school level is yards per carry. College level is points per game. Well, you know, talking about the actual fantasy points for the season, I should have said not yards per carry. So total fantasy points, points per game. But I would say like the PhD level, or if people want to dive into it, is like how many times did you finish as an RB1 or an RB2 or a wide receiver one or a wide receiver two? Because, you know, like Tyler Lockett looks great on a fantasy points per game, but he only really had 4 good games, like those kind of things. So like you can even take it to the next step further.
Right now in early projections, I have Dak Prescott with 373 fantasy points, which makes him one of the highest guys. He's going to be a sought after quarterback. Where do you think that he's going to end up going right now? And when fantasy drafts roll around amongst quarterbacks, it's not because, I mean, you might play in a league with like 12 or 11 absolute jamokes, and they're like, oh, first round quarterbacks, let's go. And then Dak's going in like the second round. But in like real leagues, where do you think that Dak should be going? Is he a part of that tier of quarterback who's like a fifth round, sixth round guy, or is he just a pass if he's going at that level?
What's a jamoke? I'm still trying to figure out. I've never heard jamoke before. Like I say mook, and some people haven't heard mook before, but what's a jamoke?
A jamoke is just another term for jabroni, which I was overusing, so I switched to jamoke.
So you kind of took like mook and jabroni and kind of put them together.
I like it. You got it.
I like it a lot. I like that word. I'm going to start using that word. There you go. Look, Dak Prescott, I've actually been in a couple of drafts already, and this we talked about at the top. This is what we're doing already. And I'm shocked at where Dak Prescott's going, because you said it. He's actually going around the fifth, sixth round. These are your experience, quote unquote, leagues. And he's going after quite a few times after Justin Herbert. And every single time, I'm just shaking my head. I understand the injury hesitation, but you mentioned it. Dak Prescott was the QB1 in points per game before he got hurt. He is somebody that we assume at this point, we're assuming a lot of people are going to be healthy from week one, Joe Burrow's included. Obviously, we have time to wait. But as of right now, assuming he's ready for week one, Dak Prescott arguably is the fourth best quarterback. And you could even make a case that he should be a little bit higher. And the only reason he's fourth and not a little bit higher is probably because of the injury risk. Because look at the team he had last year. It's the same offense. It's the same questionable defense. If anything, it's healthier this year with CeeDee Lamb in his second season. So I have a ton of Dak already, and then it looks like I'm going to have a ton of Dak this year, because in my personal rankings, I have him as the fourth quarterback.
I could see him as high as 4. I could see him as low as 8, depending on how people really felt about him. I, too, like him more than Justin Herbert. I think that there's a sneaky part of this where the Chargers' D just wasn't very good last year, weirdly enough, despite the fact that they have so many high-end players. And I think that does change a little bit with some of the moves they make, but primarily the return of Derwin James, if he can stay healthy, that maybe that Justin Herbert isn't asked to throw as much. And then it comes down to rushing, and Herbert's going to run a little bit, but I think the biggest difference between Herbert and Dak, those despite touchdowns. The fact that are going to be the rushing touchdowns. Like right now, I have Dak, his median projection in terms of rushing touchdowns is around 19%. Market share of the rushing touchdowns on the Cowboys, which is right around where he's at almost every single year. People really sleep on that stuff. He's not going to be a guy who's Lamar Jackson and challenges 1,000 rushing yards on the ground. However, he is someone who could sneakily rush for 8 touchdowns if things break right.
Right. And the thing with you go back to Justin Herbert is he actually had 5 rushing touchdowns and only 200 and change yards. A low 200 was 234. 234 yards and 5 rushing touchdowns. Like, I expect that more of Dak. If you told me both only ran for 250 yards, I'd put the odds on Dak over Herbert just because of their style and like the options that they have there. But the thing with Herbert too is you mentioned part of the defense. If you look at a lot of his big games, we're talking about 40, 45, 50 pass attempts. And the second part, and I know we're not talking Justin Herbert today, but for the comparison of Dak, I have 0, and I can see just because he keeps going as the 5th, 6th, 7th quarterback off the board, I am going to have 0 Herbert this year, because it's not just what you mentioned, the defense and the pass attempts. It's also I watched all the games. But those last couple games of the season, I know everybody's – let's just throw out the Patriots game, although it counts. That was miserable. But even if you threw that out, he didn't look that great against Denver. It felt like – teams were starting to figure out how to limit him, not completely stop him. Like, I'm not going to say he's going to be Jared Goff and fall off a cliff where teams figured out what you do to stop Jared Goff is just wait for the headset to click off and he can't figure out defenses for himself. But I did see that adjustment where NFL figured you out. Now it's on Herbert to do the same, to, you know, make his adjustment. But I can see a sophomore, not necessarily a slump, but he doesn't improve. And if that's the point, like, I'm taking Dak every single time. Dak continued, what was it, 6 touchdowns 4 years in a row or 3 years in a row? He's just going to run for him every single time. So, yeah, Dak Prescott deserves to be in the top five conversation. The only negative anybody can come up with at this point is just, hey, if you don't want to take the risk that he's not 100% come week one.
Are you a believer in the Dallas defense whatsoever? Because I'm not, and I think that really works to Dak's favor here.
No, yeah, this the Cowboys, assumedly, as of today, are going to have to beat teams like 30 to 25 and 30 to 20 and 30. Like, they're going to need to score 30 points a game is what I'm getting at. So even with what they added in the draft and even with, you know, I mean, there's a lot. They're hoping that Keanu Neal can be anything like he was with the Falcons. I mean, there's a, you look at it and it's like, you see a lot of names on the defense and you're like, ooh, okay. You know, if he's this, but there's like five guys where you're just like, is he any good at this point? So I wouldn't be surprised if it's better, but at the same time, I don't think it's all of a sudden going to be a top 10, maybe even 15 unit this year.
Okay, Dak is, you know, he's going to be one of the top five guys, top six guys at the quarterback position. Then you have Zeke, and I'm really interested on what you think that the snap share between Zeke and Tony Pollard is going to be this year, because I think that's, I'm not necessarily willing to throw out what happened last year with Zeke. Obviously, he's another year older. We saw the deficiencies in the offensive line. I think people get it in their heads with offensive line that, like, oh, Dallas's offensive line is just dominating. It's like, yeah, man, that was like 4 years ago. It's been a while since they've had like the best offensive line in the league. It's deteriorating just a little bit, and it's a pass happy team at this point. And we saw Pollard come in and do some good things, but then you have Dak back there with Andy Dalton and Benedetti playing quarterback, and yeah, he's not good. And it looked like he was hurt for most of the year too, although he wasn't really missing all that much time, but he looked like noticeably slow. So you return Zeke to this right now. I haven't projected for 60% of the rushing market share in terms of carries, but that's not just split with Tony Pollard. It's not 60-40, because I have Dak up around 16% as well. So just amongst running backs, like, is he going to be one of the few guys who still has over 70% of his team's carries? He's going to be involved at the goal line. He's going to get a few stolen from Dak, but, you know, whatever. And is he going to be involved in the receiving game? Like, what it feels like people are down on Zeke this year. Is what I'm getting at. Is he now a nice buy?
Yes. In my opinion, 100%. I will be, if I'm in drafting in the second half of the first round, I'm going to have a lot of Zeke, just like a lot of Dak. And honestly, I'm not scared of having both on the same team. And it's when they're the best options. I don't try to go for that. But that being said, people quickly forget what Zeke was doing at the beginning of last year. Zeke, for the first five games, including the one where Dak got hurt, was a top three running back. Through the first five games, you know how many touches Tony Pollard had? 20. That's including receptions. That was 20 touches through the first. I think it was 11 or 12 carries. Now, do I expect Tony Pollard to be that limited this year? No, because, you know, Zeke's another year older on the top of that. But Zeke is one of the few that 20 touches per game, there were people talking about, oh, what's the workload going to do with him? And he was fine. You mentioned the part also that he looked hurt and looked injured for a good point of the season, but the game where he came back healthy, ran for over 100 yards, and then he got kind of banged up again, and then he was quote-unquote taking a game. Like, I say quote-unquote because, you know, we don't know how much to believe when somebody says they're not 100% or now he's 100% or whatever, but the point being is supposedly he was 100% for that Philly game, which was the only other time that he ran for 100 yards, and those were both what you mentioned with the backup quarterback situation and poor quarterback play with DiNucci and Andy Dalton. So I'm still in on Zeke. I still think, look, Zeke is, what, going to be 26 this year. People act like he's 30 already, and he's still one of the best in the game. So I understand the Tony Pollard thing, but I think this is a rose-colored glasses situation because Tony Pollard, granted, it wasn't 15 carries and 20 carries and stuff like that, but people only remember it's similar like Will Fuller. People only remember the good. People don't remember when Tony Pollard was out there running for, and I know we talked about yards per carry before, but, you know, 7 carries for 2.5 yards per carry. Like, he had quite a few games where it was just meh, and it was just meh mixing in. So it's not like Tony Pollard was out there running for 80 yards on 10 carries every single week.
Is he a part of the handcuff tier that is a must-have handcuff, though?
Yes. That's where I will say. And Tony Pollard is one of those situations where, you know, a lot of people are talking about him like, oh, Latavius Murray, great, you know, good comparison. But whereas I think you and I talked about it on the last show or one of your offseason shows where, like, I feel like James Robinson still has independent value. Latavius Murray, you don't ever want to start. You even said you don't want to start him unless Kamara gets hurt. Now that might change with the Saints saying they want to run more this year, but you don't ever want to start Tony Pollard. But if Zeke was to go out, absolutely. If Zeke Elliott was out, like if we said right now, Zeke Elliott just tore his ACL in practice, he's out for the 2021 season. Tony Pollard would probably go in the second round. So
you could talk people into making him a first round pick if you really wanted to. Like he would go in the back. There would be people who would take him in the back.
I could, fair enough,
but people would. That's how much hype he would end up getting.
I agree with you there. Yeah.
Okay. So just looking at DraftKings Sportsbook right now, Dallas is actually the favorite in this division, which actually kind of surprised me a little bit. And they're massive favorites too. They're plus 125 to win the division. And what are their team totals? They do have win totals.
I was surprised by that too.
I was just looking in the wrong. What do you think that their win totals are for the year? Number over under wins. Remember, there's an extra game.
For the extra game for Dallas, I would guess it's 9.5.
It is 9.5, juiced to the under. So more money coming in on the under. So I'm really strange that they're still plus 125 to win the division. So is there anyone beyond Pollard in this backfield that we should be aware of, or is it just the two guys?
It's mostly just the two guys. I mean, even if Zeke got hurt, Pollard, as we've seen, it's only been limited times where it's happened, but Pollard steps in as the guy, and you know whether it's what's that guy's name? Whatever his name is. What the hell's his name?
Alanulua.
Yeah, Siwu. I should just say his first name is.
Oh, Siwu. I like it. Squeaker. Oh, I like where that's going.
And I'm trying to remember who the other one is. There's another one. It's not as crazy as the last name.
It's Rico.
Sounds
Dwaddle.
Like a golfer's name.
It's Rico Dwaddle.
Yeah, Rico Doddle. Yeah, Doddle.
Yeah, we have so we don't have a good enough grasp on these guys' names. They can't be good. Okay.
No, they're replacement. There might not even be replacement level. That's the point. Tony Pollard would be kind of walking into like a Latavius Murray, where like it's the guy. And then I think C was a little better than Dowdle.
Sure.
Doodle. Whatever.
The doodler. Wide receivers.
The doodler.
So here's a really interesting thing right now. How much do you think separates CeeDee Lamb from Michael Gallup in terms of fantasy points?
For 2021?
Yeah.
I will say an entire tier, if not more. I think so. It's funny. I did my breakout wide receiver or running backs and breakout wide receivers. I had planned a month ago, and CeeDee Lamb is inside. I do top five. I'm doing actually top 10 for wide receivers just because there's so many. I was doing top five for quarterbacks, running backs, and tight ends. But CeeDee Lamb was there, and CeeDee Lamb is very near the top. And I've been watching fantasy Twitter over the past couple of weeks. And, you know, people, I just know that at this point, I should have released the article a month ago because people are going to be like, no kidding, CeeDee Lamb. But I say that with this point. I am one of the people on CeeDee Lamb. I feel like right now you can still get him at a reasonable price. I feel like when we get to August, you're going to be buying him at his peak return value, because a lot of what you see people tweeting about is one of the points I had in my article is that you can have two wide receivers from the same team finish as wide receiver ones, a healthy Julio, a Calvin Ridley. We can go down the list of the Packers that did it for years on end. There's a myriad of wide receivers. Thielen and Jefferson just did it. So you can talk about all these teams. But because of that, because fantasy Twitter is talking about it, because there's people already writing articles, including myself, about it, you can be on CeeDee Lamb, but also realize that his price is just going to be so prohibitive that he now has to return wide receiver one value to even get a return on investment. So I answer your question to say I think there's a significant gap, but at the cost, which is something you talk about a lot, is like with these mixed backfields, you just said, give me the cheapest one, like the Patriots. Just always give me James White because he's the cheapest one. You would do that for years on end. At this point, I'm going to take Gallup at a discount.
So, okay, let me ask you a second question then. How close are Cooper and Lamb?
I could give you right now. Let me go to my rankings. I can tell you how close I had them. I have
Do you think it's close? Because projections have them 5 points apart for me, well ahead of Gallup. And that's just what the median projection is if you simulate the season like 10,000 times. Now, when I look at the ADPs for them, Cooper's going as the 15th wide receiver drafted, Lamb the 18th wide receiver drafted, and Gallup the 50th. So, I mean, a stubbed toe for CeeDee Lamb, all of a sudden, Michael Gallup's like a wide receiver too, and you got him for free or picked him up off the waiver wire.
You did, and that's why I'll take Gallup at the discount. I'm laughing because my way too early rankings from a month ago, I have Cooper at 15. have Lamb at 20 and have Gallup at 50.
And then that's how they're currently being drafted in early drafts. It just seems like a lot of value on Gallup. And I don't think that Gallup is someone that you roll out as your wide receiver three every single week, but in good matchups, especially against weaker secondaries, especially deep weaker secondaries, that as a flex play or a flyer play, like if you're an underdog in a matchup, I don't mind having him on my bench to insert in and be like, hey, I hope this is the game where his A dot is off the charts and it's like 3 for 153 and 2 touchdowns. Like he's, of the guys on this team, he's not going to be the 8 for 88 and 2 touchdowns. That's going to be Lamb. But it feels like Gallup is still like their explosive upside guy.
No, and here's the one thing I'm looking at too is, so let's jump all the way up to wide receiver 31 for me. Chase Claypool. What's the big difference between Chase Claypool and Michael Gallup?
Right now it's touchdowns based off last season, but who knows how that's going to
go. Boom, that's where I was going to go with it. That's exactly. So I was going to reference last year, 62, 8, 73 for Claypool. And for Michael Gallup, 59, 843, a 30-yard difference. But you just mentioned, that's what I was going to bring up, 9 touchdowns to 5. That difference right there, 30 yards and 4 touchdowns, is the difference between wide receiver 18 and wide receiver 37. So where I was going to say is Michael Gallup, and that's why I love the value, is because these names that are down here, it's just wide receiver. We talked about it last year. We're talking about it again this year. Wide receiver is insanely deep. In the 30s, there's guys like Brandon Cooks and Robbie Anderson and Corey Davis, and then even in the 40s is Marquise Brown and Antonio Brown and Devontae Parker. Michael Gallup could finish ahead of all of them if he catches 2 or 3 more touchdowns.
For sure. And even looking at the like projected market share that I have right now of targets for them, I have Cooper at 21, Lamb at 20, Michael Gallup at 15.5 with Blake Jarwin, who we'll get to in a minute, down at 10 as a part of that. Plus, you know, there's going to be the running backs. Elliott should probably have around like a 12%. Maybe Pollard gets like 4 or 5%, depending on what it is. And then guys, you know, Cedric Wilson will end up getting himself involved in the mix here. But those are just median projections. Like there is a scenario, yes, CeeDee Lamb is the better talent than Michael Gallup, but if teams are putting an emphasis on him, it's just, he's so close to Cooper. I would just so much rather have Cooper, and I don't even like Cooper because I never like having Cooper on my fantasy team. But if you're going to give me the choice between both of them at basically the same value, it's Cooper 100 times out of 100.
We've been doing this together for way too long at the point that that's why I was laughing, because the exact same thing. I never have rostered Cooper outside of trading him for him on the cheap. And I just did a dynasty startup where I took Amari Cooper because he went after CeeDee Lamb. And it's just like, you know what? If you're giving me both, and I even with the age difference, and I understand it's dynasty, but the point being is the cost invested here. If you're going to give me them at the same cost in redraft or at a cheaper cost in dynasty, I'm going to take the guy who is also still, by the way, Amari Cooper's not that old. What is Amari Cooper at this point? Like 25, 26. Not that old. No, he's about to turn 27, right, but still not that old.
Mean. Compared to us, he's not that old. But, you know, that's old for when the rest of your receivers are like 23. He's the old man on campus.
Yeah, but 27 is not – this. You still have at least – today's NFL still have at least 3-4 years left. And Amari Cooper's not somebody – it's not like the Julio Jones where you have to worry about his knees breaking down. How many games is – how many times has Amari Cooper even missed time? Once?
Yeah, I can't even – I can't recall off the top of my head when the last time he actually missed a game was. Or
the
missed
Raiders,
like,
I know he missed
like two games in a row.
Yeah, and that was like – I think that was it.
So, tight end, you have Jarwin, and then you have Dalton Schultz. They brought in the sprinkler, Jeremy Sprinkle. You know he's going to catch a touchdown if he makes the team against Washington at some point. That's just bound to happen. Any interest in these guys? Because I don't really – you'd think in such a pass-happy offense where they're going to score so many points – that if you could definitively say, hey, Blake Jarwin's going to be the guy who's starting, I guess he could theoretically have value. I don't see him being a top 12 tight end.
No, I think that's where the value would be, is that if we knew Blake Jarwin was going to be the guy, but now I'll go to Tampa Bay, draw the parallel there, is even if he's the guy, someone around Gronkowski, is very touchdown heavy, somebody that probably doesn't, as you mentioned, finish as a tight end one. If he does, it's going to be hard predicting any week when you can actually get that value out of him. So, like, again, you and I hate the, oh, everybody's good in best ball, because everybody's good in best ball. But outside of that, that's the only scenario I would, because you're going to try and guess the games. You're going to guess wrong half the time. And it's going to be similar to Tampa Bay, similar to Carolina, where, granted, Carolina's tight end situation was almost irrelevant because of how they were with the three wide receivers last year. But when you have three wide receivers of this caliber, you're lucky to get a tight end involved. And at this point, Schultz, you know, Schultz did more than people expected last year, so I don't think he's going to completely go away.
I would say that Dallas is a what fantasy offense? Top five fantasy offense for everyone involved?
Five. Yeah.
Yeah, they're going to be
talking about.
They're going to be a team you're going to want to own most people from.
Yeah, you have an RB1. You have potentially two wide receiver ones. And you have probably, I mean, a touchdown or two puts Gallup inside the wide receiver three, if not higher. And then you have a top five quarterback. I mean, even if you don't include the tight end, you don't get that on most teams. You could probably say they're a top three fantasy offense.
Yeah, I mean, I would buy that. I have to make a list of all the teams, but they would certainly be on that short list of being a top three fantasy team. How about one who's not? The New York Giants on DraftKings Sportsbook. Their over under is how many, Jake?
6.5.
It is 7 even. And I'm looking at the New Jersey version of DraftKings Sportsbook right now, and everyone's betting the over. Big shocker on that one. They have the third highest odds to win this division. They're behind Dallas and Washington at +350 to win the NFC East. And they made some moves. And I don't know. I mean, bringing in Kenny Golladay, they're going to get Saquon Barkley back. That all sounds like great news. How does this work with Daniel Jones? Because last year, we liked Daniel Jones. And the whole reason was going to be that he has a really difficult schedule to start the season. Then it gets super soft. But you'd think that the guy would figure out fumbling fucking issues after a while, wouldn't you?
You would. Speaking of Barkley, I was trying to find out where she went. I was looking around for it. But Daniel Jones, funny enough, in my top five breakout quarterbacks, I included Daniel Jones. And I said, because let's talk about why people were drafting him. Remember last year, and I know you know this, as a fringe QB1 was because the rushing upside plus what he just did the year before. He wasn't awful the year before. He was awful as a passer last year, but it's also the fact that he runs for 400, 500, 600 yards, and he's not quite Josh Allen with the rushing touchdowns, but when you offset it with the rushing yards, you know, it's a little bit more. What did Josh Allen run for last year? I feel like it was in the 400s. 421. Yeah, 421 and 8. Daniel Jones would probably be more like a 550, 600, and 405, but that kind of almost evens out. And that was the excitement. Daniel Jones can just throw for 36, 3,800 yards and 25 touchdowns with that rushing upside. You're talking about a QB1, a low-end QB1. And that was the excitement. And that's why. But now you just mentioned it. So you have that excitement. People have already written him off because of how terrible his season was. But you bring in Kenny Golladay. You get a healthy Saquon Barkley. Maybe Evan Ingram can stop dropping the damn ball every time it comes his way. Sterling Shepard can go back to being the number two or number three with the same thing of Darius Slayton. And you can see why the Giants fan base is, you know, betting the over. You can see why there's optimism around this team. Can it all go horribly wrong? Of course. But you're telling me now I'm going to get Daniel Jones for free. I will take Daniel Jones for free as my flyer second quarterback of like, hey, maybe he turns into being something as a surprise. Maybe he's back to, you know, 3,520 touchdowns just doing that, but playing a full season and running for 506, and you're going to get back into a top 15 quarterback conversation.
Yeah, it's really because it both depends on Daniel Jones and his effect on the wide receivers and what their potential fantasy upside is going to be. Right now, he's being drafted as the 29th quarterback off the board, one spot ahead of Ryan Fitzpatrick and one spot behind Jameis Winston. That's where he's going in fantasy drafts. Like you said, people were taking him like 10th, 11th, 12th last year. Like, oh, here comes the upside. Here comes the upside. It never materialized. But Barkley is coming back. Barkley is still going as running back number two off the board. I don't know if I would have the guts to take him at number two. I know all logic says I should take him at number two, but I just don't know if I want to do it.
Yeah, we'll say, hey, come here, Barkley. She knew. She walked back over. There we go. Hey, Barkley. There we go. So anyway, I could see both sides of it. So I forget who I was talking about recently, but I said, if you want to take Derrick Henry as number two, honestly, if you want to take Derrick Henry as number one, because Christian McCaffrey is coming off a major injury, I'm not going to argue with you. Derrick Henry's a freaking major.
Hold on. I would say that Dalvin Cook would probably be my likely number two if it wasn't going to be
Dalvin Cook's missed time every single year, though.
Yeah, it's fine. I'll fill in elsewhere. I'll take Saquon Barkley's backup, my guy, Devontae Booker, and he can be my good handcuff, and then he'll be a running back one, and he'll be better than Gallmania was when Barkley was out last time. And
if Gallmania was good.
He was okay for some weeks.
Well, until the backup ends up being Gary Brightwell, who they drafted. I'm not putting a lot of faith in Devontae Booker. But point being, I don't think it's the point. What I was going to say here, I don't think it's as clear cut as everybody's making it. And what you kind of just said, I don't think it's definitely Christian McCaffrey, 100% number one. Saquon Barkley, 100% number two. Dalvin Cook, 100% number three. I actually have Dalvin Cook in front of Barkley because of we don't know. And you also see, I think it was Jordan Renan who said that they might ease him in to start the season, similar to what happened when Dalvin Cook came back from his injury, is the fact that those first two or three, almost four games, and if you remember that too, is he didn't come back like gangbusters initially too, because he kind of was like tweaking other things during that time. So there's risk with Barkley. There's risk with Christian McCaffrey too. That's the weird thing, and that's what I was bringing up Christian McCaffrey for, is because everybody's like, can we trust Barkley? Well, why are we so okay with Christian McCaffrey? Like, granted, it wasn't 2 years in a row, but they're both coming off significant injuries.
I'll tell you what the difference is. I think it's twofold.
What is the difference?
One, it's Barkley. Okay. It's been 2 years in a row, so that gets ingrained in the back of people's minds. Okay. That he's missed significant time. And McCaffrey is a way better fantasy player. Like, he's a significantly better fantasy football player on your team if they're both 100% than Saquon Barkley is. And it's not even really close.
Not really close.
I mean, Christian McCaffrey outscored every other running back 2 years ago by like 8 points per game or something stupid like that.
Yeah, but you know what happened the year before that, right?
What happened?
Saquon Barkley averaged more fantasy points per game and scored more than he did when they both played 16 games. Again, also different offenses. Also, Christian McCaffrey, different quarterback this year. And again, I'm just saying, I don't think it should be so clear cut. I'm taking Christian McCaffrey number one. I'm not saying I'm not. I brought it up to basically go back to the Derrick Henry thing. Like, Dalvin Cook's missed time every single year. Maybe 1 year he played a full season. I don't know. I know somebody will correct me in the comments. But you're talking about injury risks with all of them, and everybody's going to be like, oh, the 370 carries or whatever. Like, Derrick Henry is 6'4", 265. He's a freak. If he gets hurt, it's going to be because somebody fell into his knee sideways. It's not going to be because all of a sudden Derrick Henry is so banged up. Derrick Henry's not going to be banged up. He could suffer the same thing that Barkley just suffered. So all that being said is, I think there's a big four, and I put Kamara in a group by himself because I think his uncertainty, whether it's Taysom Hill or Jameis Winston, like, kind of leaves his situation up in the air. But I think those big four, if you want to take any of them, the 1-4, and what I was going to say with this whole conversation being is, I want the fourth pick because I just want to take whoever's there at number four and then get the quicker turnaround.
See, I still think that the offense that I want to be a part of here is Carolina's offense, not the Giants' offense. And that's what the one thing that worries me about Derrick Henry. I mean, in terms of full point PPR.
So you want Sam Darnold offense over Daniel Jones offense? Like, definitively? Like, it's that big of a gap?
For me, yeah. I'd rather have the Joe Brady offense.
I'd rather have the fact that, you know, Daniel Jones' excitement of what we were just talking about, that Daniel Jones could still be what Daniel Jones was 2 years ago. And I don't like I don't like Daniel Jones.
Daniel Jones can be Daniel Jones from 2 years ago. I mean, if we're talking fantasy wise, the reason you'd be interested in Daniel Jones is because of the rushing yards. I think when it comes down to Sam Darnold, like, I don't think that he's probably the same as Teddy Bridgewater when it comes down to it. I just know how this offense can operate. And even Christian McCaffrey put up those numbers 2 years ago with like the absolute worst people at QB. Except for Tyler Henneke, who's, and like, pretty good.
That was also not a rule Brady offense. And
But I think that this offense is going to be good. Just I believe in the way that he runs his offense. He's probably going to be a head coach as of next year. And it's not so much that Darnold's good or Darnold's bad. I think he's fine. But I've seen Christian McCaffrey do it in a bad offense with bad quarterbacks. Now he has a good offensive coordinator. They have good receivers. And if Darnold can be like a little bit of a step up from what Bridgewater was last year, I mean, it's not like Christian McCaffrey wasn't the highest scoring running back in the games that he played.
No, I don't disagree with anything that you're saying. It's just my biggest point that I'm coming back to is, I just don't think there's a definitive break between all of them. Like, I'm going to put all four in a tier together. And if you want to take any of them first, if you want to make every argument you're making right now for Christian McCaffrey, if you want to make the same, if you want to go back to, you said Dalvin Cook, if you want to make Dalvin Cook your number one pick, I wouldn't do it. But if you wanted to, because you might have some hesitations about Christian McCaffrey, that's fine with me. Again, my be all end all here is just, I think there's a four And I think they all deserve to be the same. I don't think there's one that's flawless.
What do we make of the other big reason here is if Daniel Jones is going to be scrambling around, and I do have him as like a 17% market share, I'm not saying that it's going to take away from Barkley in terms of rushing yards or rushing touchdowns, but it could take away in terms of market share and overall targets and receptions, where you know the baseline that you're thinking of Christian McCaffrey in terms of, or even Dalvin Cook at this point, it feels like their receiving upside is going to be higher. Maybe not upside, but their median receiving stats are going to be higher than Barkley's, unless Daniel Jones just kind of becomes a different quarterback.
I think you can make an argument for Christian McCaffrey potentially not seeing as much in the passing game as well, because you talk about 2 years ago, that was Curtis Samuel before being Curtis Samuel, and DJ Moore just seeing 140 targets. That was like it in the passing game. And I think what was Curtis Samuel's targets 2 years ago? I would guess probably somewhere around 100, 105 maybe. So now you have DJ Moore and Robbie Anderson. They drafted Terrace Marshall, and I'm not saying that I wouldn't rather have McCaffrey's situation in the passing game than the Giants, because the Giants did add Kenny Galladay. They still have Shepard. They still have Slayton. They still have Evan Ingram. And then you come down to Daniel Jones, but also Daniel Jones passing to the running back has done a little bit better job than Sam Darnold has. I mean, Sam Darnold has just been awful so far. You know, you and I probably talked about at some point, I know I've made the joke before, that to your point about Joe Brady, that if Joe Brady makes Sam Darnold into a top 15 quarterback, not even top 10, just top 15, give him a head coach job, put him in the Hall of Fame, because Sam Darnold's been miserable, and it includes in a clean pocket. He is some of the worst numbers you've ever seen from a clean pocket, and I bring that up to say that with Daniel Jones, it's a stark difference. I mean, you're talking night and day with a clean pocket, and obviously it comes down to offensive line play, but I say that too, if both offenses work out, a 10, you know, 10 out of 10, if they're exactly what both teams hope they can be, I think Saquon Barkley's passing and is going to offset what he's going to be able to do rushing wise for the difference between Christian McCaffrey. I just think like I see why people want the optimism, whereas I still agree with you. I'm taking Christian McCaffrey. There's more risk with Barkley, but I think if both situations play out how they want them to be, I think we're going to be talking about them neck and neck like they were 2019, like where they were like maybe a point and a half a point apart from each other in points per game difference. So I think they're going to be very close if both scenarios work out the way they should.
How many fantasy points has Saquon Barkley scored since you named your dog after him?
40 total?
If that. 2 years?
I don't know. How many? Like, you're going to make me pull it up. Let's see. Saquon Barkley. So I got Barkley. She was born. Actually, her birthday is coming up June 8th. She was born June 8th, 2019. So I got her August of that year. Oh, he played a lot of games in 2019. So there you go. Oh, wait. Did I get her in 2020? Now my years are starting. Like, getting old, Pat.
You're not getting as old as me. I had my second son, and all of a sudden I have like gray hair. I have to be like Eric Bischoff and use the Just for Men. And I'm just like, man,
I got her in 2019.
Father time really just kind of catches up with you here.
Just to like beat you up as soon as you have two kids. He has 230 fantasy points in 2 years. He scored 218 in 2019.
That's not bad. Put it this way. I have Barkley projected right now at 331 PPR fantasy points this year. I have Dalvin Cook at 369.
Okay, what do you have Christian McCaffrey at?
Now I have to go do a search on that. McCaffrey, where are you at, McCaffrey? Nope. Ray McLeod. Nope. Tucker McCann. Nope. Colt McCoy. Christian McCaffrey. 393.5 PPR points. That would be with 108 targets. And this is median projection, by the way. 86.8 receptions. There we go. So 87 receptions. There's 87 points right there. Receiving yards, 724. Receiving touchdowns, 3. Like that's going to be the most of any running back, probably, unless it's like Austin Eckler.
Okay. So, by the way, Saquon Barkley, his rookie season was 338 for fantasy points. If you want to go back to your receptions point about it, so his receptions that he was on pace for in 2019 went from 91 as a rookie to 64 in his second season. So even if you're in that 60 to 70 range, it's not Christian McCaffrey. But I think that, again, I would take, if you told me rushing wise, I would take Barkley over McCaffrey. You talk receiving wise, McCaffrey over Barkley.
So as the backup though, you mentioned Brightwell over Booker. Do you think that sticks?
No. I was saying I wouldn't be surprised if he pushes him. I'm just Booker's replacement level running back for me. And honestly, between the two backfields, way, way more excited and grabbing every single time I can in the 13th, 14th round is Hubbard for Carolina. No question about it. I would draft him. Even if Booker was on the board, I would still draft Hubbard before I drafted Booker.
So it's just like me taking Mike Davis in the last round last year?
Yes. Yes.
It works out.
Because, I mean, who's in Carolina? I know Bonifon was in and out and because he got hurt. I don't even know if he's still on the roster anymore. They had the dude from the Jets, Cannon. And then I don't remember, Mike Davis is gone. And I don't remember even who else they have on this team. Hubbard's the guy. If something happens to Christian McCaffrey again, Hubbard can be a top 20 running back.
All right, I hear Barkley in the background. Doesn't like all the Barkley slander. Sure. I'm not even trying to slander Barkley. I just don't think he's like, I'm just expressing my pensiveness over taking him number two overall.
Do you realize how little she tries to play with toys by herself and now she's doing it? Like, she knows. She's just doing it to be a jerk.
Fair enough. I mean, I do stuff to be a jerk all the time. Outside of you, ask any one of my guests about that.
Fair enough. We're two jerks in a pod here.
Wide receivers.
I wasn't even trying to do a play on words.
Yeah. Wide receivers on the Giants. Now this is where it gets tricky. You got Galladay. They draft Tony. Slayton's still there. They have Sterling Shepard. They have John Ross on the team, which I just totally forgot about. Dante Pettis, I believe, is on this roster. Then you have
Evan. I don't
know
if he's anymore.
He's not. He already got cut. Good for him. So of those guys, we'll talk about tight ends in a second. Galladay, Tony, Slayton, Shepard. Although if Sterling Shepard ended up with the most points, I wouldn't be super stunned.
I wouldn't be super stunned either, especially because Shepard can go back to playing primarily the slot, and he does a lot. I wrote an article about him 2 years ago, I think it was, because I was talking about quarterback changes with rookies included, and I was talking about the difference between, and the whole reason behind that article was Adam Thielen and the question of whether or not Adam Thielen was going to be forced to play outside a lot more. But one of them was why I pulled up a Sterling Shepard, and that still holds true today. And that's why I say is Sterling Shepard is definitively better out of the slot. Someone to go back to the years with Randall Cobb, when Randall Cobb was all of a sudden asked to play outside and be the number one for the Packers. And he struggled. And then he was back to being good. And this is not today's Randall Cobb, obviously, but you know, some receivers are just not equipped to do more. We saw rookies last year, Jalen Reagor and Henry Ruggs. They weren't ready to play outside and be the number one wide receiver. There's some limitations to their games, but there's also some limitations in general with wide receivers. And so if you told me to rank them, yeah, I would probably go Galladay, Shepard, Slayton, Tony. I don't think Tony is going to be fantasy relevant at all without an injury. I think he's somebody that does better real life value, but for 2022, if you're any type of redrafter, or dynasty, or keeper, that type of situation, Tony is he was drafted to replace Sterling Shepard because Sterling Shepard frees up $10 million off the books when they cut him next year. And I think there's only like $3 or $4 million dead cap. I would be surprised if Shepard's on the team next year. So Tony's a nice one that you see, and in DFS he could be fun. But for pure redraft or for pure fantasy purposes, I don't think he's going to have much standalone value at all.
Yeah, the move with Shepard is just about over receptions every single game. That tends to cash.
That's all he does. The Galladay situation is going to be interesting because you know this, and people who have watched Galladay for his career know this. He doesn't separate. He's like, actually kind of similar to Dez Bryant, but not Dez Bryant overall ability. Like, I'd take Dez Bryant 10 times out of 10 over Kenny Galladay, but similar to him in the fact that he's never been a great separator. That's not what he does well. It's the fact that even when he's blanketed, he comes down with the ball a lot of times. Why I mention that is because I'm hesitant on Kenny Galladay as a whole, not just because of this move, not just because of touchdown value. It's because Daniel Jones isn't the most aggressive. If you look at it, like Ryan Fitzpatrick throwing to Kenny Galladay, do it. He's just going to throw the ball into Kirk Cousins. Just do it all the time. And they make some stupid decisions, but that'd be great for their value. I'm worried that Daniel Jones doesn't look at him enough because he's covered, because of Daniel Jones' hesitancy of throwing into coverage. And that hurts Galladay even more than what we've already seen. So I have Galladay as a fringe wide receiver too. And that's with touchdown value behind it.
The way that I see it, with just so many options, and even if we do get Barkley involved into the backfield, and now they have two tight ends potentially on this team to throw to, that I just I wonder about the wide receiver sets to begin with. So we just named four guys. They're not going to be playing all four wide receiver sets. They have enough tight ends that maybe they go jumbo and go in like in a 12 package. Yes, Galladay will be on the field the most of all these guys, but I don't think that he's going to be someone that plays 100% of the snaps at all times. It'll be like an 80, 85, that type of guy when he's healthy, and if he's a bit banged up, which we've seen over the years, then you know, it might be down to like 60 or 65. Like, they have enough options that I could see them rotating guys in and out, and that's just going to hurt the overall number of chances that he gets to score fantasy points when it comes down to it. And with so many mouths to feed, you're not going to see a Kenny Galladay 27% market share anymore. You're going to see a Kenny Galladay like 17% market share, 18% market share, and he's not always the most efficient guy on the field. Now, there is the counter to this, where they went out, they spent all the big money on Kenny Galladay, they want to use him, he's going to be the focal point of this offense after Barkley. I could buy that, I just don't think that it happens.
Yeah, and I was waiting and smiling, you mentioned the one name behind all this too, and it's not Deion Jones, it's
the clapper.
We still have Jason. Yes, we still have Jason. Now, granted, oh gosh, I was just about to say his name and now it's escaped out of my head. They brought in a coordinator to help with Garrett and bring a fresh mind in. And I'm not saying, but it's, I'm not using the cliche, you can't teach an old dog new tricks type thing, but Garrett's still in charge. And I say that to the fact of where we're going to go back to now, Daniel Jones. Is Daniel Jones going to throw the ball 600 times this year? Because unless he's throwing it 600 times, what you just brought up is just, it's not only the target share, it's also the fact that Kenny Galladay was struggling to probably get over 100 to 510 targets. And actually, I think my initial projections, when they come out in our draft kit next month, I think my initial projections was only like I want to say it was 108 or 109 for him in targets. And granted, he did a lot with the 115, I think he got with Detroit 2 years ago. But at the same time, what he did a lot was he scored, what was it, 10 or 11 touchdowns? Do you remember how many touchdowns he scored? But that's the thing. He scored the touchdowns.
In terms of the projections that I'm using right now, I have 104 targets, 65 catches.
You're right in the same range.
1,005 yards and 5 touchdowns. Now, the touchdowns could be way off, and that could be the big differentiator in all of this. If he does score 10 touchdowns, then he's going to be like a fringe wide receiver one with those numbers. But if not, and he is around like 3, 4, 5, you know, he's going to be like wide receiver 22 or something.
And that's the biggest thing. You know, go back to the conversation we had before about Gallup. If the touchdowns can swing wildly, but I would rather bank on somebody with a market share we know is going to happen, and a easily attainable yardage and reception number. Where, okay, worst case scenario, you get 4 touchdowns, you're still wide receiver 25. You get 8, and all of a sudden you're inside the top 10. Like, I'd rather go for those guys than the Kenny Galladays of the world. Like a healthy Odell Beckham. Like a healthy Odell Beckham, which I know is a huge ask, but we know a healthy Odell Beckham's catching 1,200 yards and change, and if he turns into Odell Beckham from 3 years ago, all of a sudden now you tack on 8 or 9 touchdowns, and he could be back to the wide receiver one conversation.
Yeah, I don't know if I can go down the OBJ route this season. Although
This is the year when nobody wants him.
Now that everyone's actually given up on him, now is probably the time. I want to talk tight ends, though, on the Giants. Evan Engram is there. But then you have Kyle Rudolph for reasons that I'm currently unaware of. But you know Kyle Rudolph's going to steal like 5 touchdowns. And no one's ever going to you're not going to draft Kyle Rudolph. You're never going to play him on DraftKings. You're never going to prop bet him, anything like that. Although, first touchdown, who is the jabroni? See, I'm mixing it in now. Was it Caden Smith? Was that the guy's name?
Yes.
Is he still around?
It was the 49ers. The 49ers drafted him, and he didn't even make the opening day, and they got him early. They drafted him last year. I think he's still on the roster. I don't see why he wouldn't be, because they just, like I said, they just got him last year. Yeah, Case Smith's still on the roster.
Yeah, so he'll have some sort of weird involvement.
And
oh my guy,
Toilolo.
Yeah, Levine Toilolo. He's always fun. Yeah, he'll be on the field just for fun blocking purposes. They just have too many fucking guys. That's the issue with this team. That it's almost like you say with the Patriots backfield, like, who is going to be the cheapest of these? And then where it's receiver, not running back, do I even want these guys?
No. Well, go back to what I tell and say every single year. You buy the cake, not the icing. Just buy Daniel Jones and be done with it, because he costs
you nothing,
top of it.
I prefer just buying the icing and not the cake, and then eating the icing out of the thing with my hand. I'm like, no, and it's delicious. I don't need all those. I'll take the carbs that come in the icing, not the carbs that come in the cake.
Fair enough. Oh, there's a tight end called, I don't even know who this, Cole Hicutini on the roster. They like a million tight ends. I was going to go back to it. You said for reasons unknown. The reasons they brought in Kyle Rudolph is for this. They brought him in for the pass blocking tight end situation. But if he's the pass blocking tight end, unless you're kicking Evan Engram off the field, now you have two tight ends, and go back to the same conversation we've been having about this team the entire time. Well, if you have two tight ends, probably don't have four wide receivers on the field. So it's just, it's, I think I'm buying Daniel Jones and nothing else. Maybe Shepherd at cost is just always a good bet. Because even if he misses games, you just cut him. He doesn't cost you anything, ever. Shepherd's so disrespected.
Where do you think that Shepherd is going amongst wide receivers right now?
My guess would be in the 50s.
Shit.
Is that where he's going?
Wide receiver number 70 overall right now in fantasy drafts.
Oh, just do that. Oh, they also brought in Kelvin Benjamin to be a tight end. Don't forget about that.
Oh, Jesus Christ, really?
Oh, you missed that? Didn't see that?
I actually think that I have Kelvin Benjamin's name muted on Twitter. That just that anytime he is mentioned,
like
he does not. There's no way he's making the team as a tight end, is there?
I mean, he should have been. He was the person that should have been converted to a tight end to begin with.
How old is Kelvin Benjamin now? Is he like surprisingly like 25 years old? Because he wasn't good when he was
26 or 27.
There's no. He was on the Cam Newton Super Bowl team, wasn't he?
Oh my God, he's 30. Yeah.
Yeah, like he wasn't good as a fat man in his prime, but now he's going to be good all of a sudden? Sure.
He was the one that kicked off all these everybody's moving to tight end thing. He was doing it before Tibby was doing it. He was doing it before it was cool, man.
Can I share a secret with you?
You hate Kelvin Benjamin?
Well, yeah, sure. I'm rooting for Tim Tebow. And not only for him to make the team, but him to be, like, kind of good.
I'm rooting for him to be good, too. I love the hate that he's getting. Like, oh, you're taking away a job from somebody. And guess what? If he makes the damn team, he's taking the job because he's the best option they have. Like, shut up. If he can succeed as a tight end, he can succeed at anything. If he would have worked out with the Mets, that would have been fine. The Mets thing I could understand a little bit because that was clearly the Wilpons PR scheme. But, you know, with the football situation, God, and that dude was busting out of the jacket. And then I'm not even including the pictures, like, because you know how they always time those pictures. Like, Mike Davis's legs looking like the size of a tray. They always time those pictures weird. But I don't even talk about the Tim Tebow where he's holding the ball with I'm talking about when he was on the stage. I think it was in Texas somewhere, and like he was popping out of his freaking jacket. This dude's jacked.
Yeah,
I want him to succeed. I'm with you.
It's like that Derrick Henry and Deion Lewis photo from 2 years ago, where it looked like that.
The DK Metcalf one. Remember the one that he was like on the water or something?
Yeah. So tight ends, Evan Engram, maybe, but probably not.
Nah, I'd say Evan Engram's kind of like a mid. Here's the thing, though, and this is not what we're talking about. He's a mid tight end two for me.
Oh, great.
If you want to take, but if you want to take him over like Austin Hooper, because what if he gets his hands back from 2 or 3 years ago? But what I'm saying is, like, tight end, I want somebody that could potentially finish top five. I don't who wants tight end 10? Because you know what tight end 10 did for you? 550 yards and 6 touchdowns. Whoopty freaking do.
Like I don't know if Robert Tonyan's going to be any good this year, but I think I would just rather gamble on him than Engram. And if he sucks, I'll just cut him and pick up some other loser off the waiver wire. Like you kind of hit on it. Like, do I want the guy who's consistently scoring 6 points a week for me? No, not really.
No. No, you don't. Not at all. I mean, look, and there's people that pop up every single Logan Thomas last year. Where did Logan Thomas finish? Like, I want to say 8th? 6th. Logan Thomas finished 6th last year.
Logan Thomas can be really good this year, too. That's kind of what I like about him, is that he's sort of like the upgrade of Evan Engram in terms of fantasy numbers, where his floor is higher than Evan Ingram's. Plus, he has a bunch of upside. Like, I talk about like the 8-for-82 type guy. That's Logan Thomas.
Yeah. By the way, do you know who finished tight end 11 last year?
No. Hayden Hurst.
Jimmy Graham.
No,
Hayden Hurst finished 9th at 571-6.
All right, well, I was like, close. You asked me for 11th. I guess the guy randomly who was 9th.
No. I was saying that with disdain for Hayden Hurst finishing at in the tight end position, not disdain for your answer. That's more the point of like 571 yards and 6 touchdowns. You're tight end number 9.
Trying to see. Like, I would much rather have like Tyler Higbee at the back of the draft. Not that I think that he's going to be any. Like, he could be good. I see a path where he is a fantasy. I don't want to say impact player, but a tight end that you start every week who's good. Like a top five, he could be the fifth tight end this year in fantasy points if things break right for him with Stafford, with no Gerald Everett around. It makes sense. I can work out a logical case in my mind where that happens. He's being drafted as tight end number 18 over Evan Engram, who is going to do the same thing he does every single year.
Yeah, I'm with you 100% on Higbee. I have a lot of Higbee, but for everything you just said, Stafford, no Gerald Everett, which that's nobody's focusing on that. Gerald Everett's gone, everybody. Like, that was the all excitement for Tyler Higbee, and he was there last year. By the way, the difference between Hayden Hurst, 127 fantasy points at number 9, no, 121 points, and tight end 19 is 20 fantasy points for the entire year, not even 2 points per game.
That's crazy.
So, yeah, just give me somebody that can potentially. I'm with you. I don't think Robert Tonyan is going to do that again touchdown-wise, but I'll take the chance that he does over most of these options.
No, 100%. Like, if we're trying to mine target share and just opportunities and targets overall at the tight end position, like, it's going to be a tough scene. Not going to lie to you.
Yeah, that's why we had the conversation that you and I did, and that's why I said I would take Kyle Pitts as the fifth tight end off the board just for that, because he could finish potentially top three, especially if Julio Jones is there. So I'll take that chance. I'm not worried about taking the chance on Mike Gesicki. Oh, where's Mike Gesicki going to go? From 700 yards to 800? Yay.
I mean, that could be pretty good, I suppose.
He already finished his tight end 7. What's his ceiling? Tight end 6? That's what I'm saying. It's like these tight end 5, 6, 7s, 8s, 9s, like those, well, 5 is where I have Pitts. But, and we do this every single year. This is the whole group, the guys that disappoint every single year. The O.J. Howards and the Evan Engrams and Hayden Hurst last year. And it's this group of everybody from like 7 through about 11 every single year ends up being the, like, why did we even draft these guys?
I suppose so, but you have to draft a tight end at some point. And
yeah, round 14.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. Do you think that there is, I know that people do stream tight ends, but if you just, if someone told you, you can draft random tight end in round 9 or round 14, and you have to stick with this guy, you know, for 3-4 weeks, and then you have to pick someone else up, or you didn't draft a tight end at all, and the only, you had to play someone different every single week, or maybe you've, not necessarily every single week, but starting in week 1, you only have available free agent tight ends. Do you think that you would score more points out of your tight end position rather than drafting Evan Engram?
Yes, I do. I do think streaming tight ends is a viable option, especially when you talk about, if you look at things that, like, you have in your data, I have my APA, just the points allowed. Like, you talk about strength of schedule, which is actually strength of opponent for what they give at the tight end position. And you can target teams that specifically give up to that area. And then you could just target matchups and go down that road. I mean, if you did that last year, there was a lot of weeks. I was doing it in one league, and it wasn't the most fun, and I didn't hit every single week. But I remember playing the Schultz of the world, and then, of course, he ended up being wildly popular. So he actually worked in a lot of leagues by himself. But, like, Gronkowski towards the end of the year, because nobody wanted Gronkowski because he wasn't doing anything until the second half of the season. But Logan Thomas, who else? Jonnu was in that mix because you just wanted a touchdown from him. I'm trying to... Ooh, our boy, which I never did, but, you know, Jared Cook trying to chase that touchdown. That's really what you're really just trying to chase somebody who scores a touchdown on 40 yards. And you could do that, and you get 40 yards over 16 games with a touchdown in half of them, and now you have tight end 8.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty viable strategy if you really wanted to go for it. It takes a lot of guts. I actually played back when I cared about season-long fantasy football way too much before the, you know, popularization of DraftKings and betting on football. When I had more time to screw around with, I used to join, like, random public leagues, and just sort of as a test myself, and I would write, like, articles around it. That's how I used to write my waiver wire column, is I would basically just draft kickers for 16 rounds, like, fill out my teams with the worst guys possible, and then starting with week 1, I would construct my team from the waiver wire to see how well that I could do it. It's not as bad as you would think.
No, you go back, for everybody out there, just as a test, I mean, go back and look at the ADP from last year and look at how many people, just let alone as what you're talking about, but look at how many people are starting at round 5 that weren't on your roster by the end of the season.
I mean, is round 5 the worst round? Like, has anyone ever good been drafted in round 5?
No, actually, it's funny you said the reason round five came to mind. I actually think round five is super wide receiver value this year, just from the drafts I've been doing. Like, yeah, I know there's the argument every single year and people who want to go wide receiver early and, you know, I'll wait on running back or a bell cow running back or two running backs or three running backs or what you love to do. And I definitely have no problem doing it this year where, you know, I'm one of the people that I don't like taking Kelce in the first round. You and I have that debate every single year. But yeah. I started a draft.
And I always do it and then maybe try to double up with Kittle.
Yes, on top of it. I remember that as well. But I did a draft this year where I was towards the end of the first, as the 11th pick. So I did Kelce because I'm like, you know what? If Kelsey's there in the second round, I would take him at that point. So why not just do it now and make sure I get him? So I went Kelce running back, went running back again in the third, and then wide receiver. In the fifth round of wide receivers, you're talking about what's on the board. We're talking about people that were, you know, arguably third or fourth round last year because of concerns. Like you're talking about potentially
I got the list right now. Thielen, Galladay, Thielen, Cooper Kupp, Deontay Johnson, Tyler Lockett, Brandon Ayuk, DJ Moore, Odell Beckham, T. Higgins, and Will Fuller. That's like your five, sixth round receivers right now.
Those are all twos. Those are all twos potentially finishing inside the top 15 if things go right. Granted, you know, it's not the best, but where I say is like, and then if you go wide receiver again in the sixth round, you have two twos, both probably finishing close to the top 15 if things go right, but you've also started with Kelce, who gives you that leg up, and two really good running backs. So that's why, like, I think round five this year is a just gift of value at wide receiver this year.
Well, we've went for an hour on two teams. I was hoping we would get eight teams in this. So let's call it quits for part one of the NFC East team breakdowns. We'll probably have to figure out a way to streamline this a little bit. This video will do well, though, mainly because Dallas and New York Giants are going to be in the title. And everyone, there's enough people in those two places alone that people will click on that. And then we'll try to speed it up for the other ones.
We can include Washington and Philly with another division.
Yeah, you know what? We'll do Washington and Philly as a standalone, and then we'll continue to do them. I might even bring on some other people, so I don't waste all of your time, and we get some dissenting opinions. Since we basically just litigated like most of the league through these two teams somehow.
I know. We just got everybody involved. Draft strategies, did 10 other teams somewhere in this mix.
It's
good though.
I'm just so excited to be talking fantasy football again. Obviously, I love my golfs, but I got to start doing like two fantasy football shows a week. So I'm just ready for the grind that I know that is coming of eight fantasy football shows a week. Well, not even fantasy football, betting on football, DraftKings football, like I mentioned. But this is going to be a lot of fun. I got a huge...
Speaking of betting.
Oh, yeah. Let's hear it.
Because you mentioned that about the Cowboys. As soon as all the lines came out, I put a little chunk on Washington to win the division and actually the NFC.
Really?
Yeah. Mostly the division. I mean, the division was more money because it's just like that. Those odds don't make any sense to me. Like that defense is ridiculous, still ridiculous. And what was their biggest issue last year? And you add Fitzpatrick and Curtis Samuel and you drafted Dyami Brown. And now you have a second year of Antonio Gibson and health. I just that line made I can see the Cowboys winning the division, but that line made no sense to me.
Yeah, it's plus 285, right? You know what? Let's talk about Washington. Let's finish this off. We can be more efficient. We don't need to litigate every single person at their position versus every other player in the league. We can just talk about the team specifically. I mentioned Fitzpatrick before. He is going to be starting in Washington this season. Fantasy-wise, this is never really good after he signs a deal. That's usually when he kind of craps out. Then he takes a backup deal. Then he comes in for four games. Like, hey, Ryan Fitzpatrick's pretty good. Let's give him a big deal. I think that he's an upgrade, obviously, over Dwayne Haskins from last year and probably even Alex Smith for these receivers. But for me, like, even in two quarterback leagues, it feels like he's going to lose his job at some point, doesn't it?
To who?
Who cares?
I do care. Like, you know, I'm the biggest Tyler Heinicke fan there is out there. ODU represent, man. But I love Heinicke. I don't think he's losing the job to Heinicke. Like, put it this way. Unless Fitzpatrick gets hurt, he's starting every single game for Washington.
You see, you can say that, but when Fitzpatrick goes bad, he's unplayable.
Okay, for fantasy purposes, he's unplayable. But they're not turning to their backups. That's the issue here. It's like, you would have to have, like, four... terrible. You would have to two to three interception games before they turned to Heinicke, because again, Heinicke was fun. He was a little bit of spark. or even the other one from Carolina, Kyle Allen. They're just, you don't bring in Fitzpatrick for what he can do, for what this team is. He's a veteran on top of being somebody you know can win games. Yes, it can go horribly wrong. And when Fitzpatrick goes wrong, he turns into the pumpkin. But you mentioned for fantasy purposes, super flex, there's appeal. Two quarterback, there's appeal. Single, he's going to be in that Jared Goff conversation, scoring 16, 17, maybe points per game at best. So he's a mid QB2 at best. But for real life purposes, he's not coming off the damn field unless it's three. It needs to be three terrible, not bad games, three terrible games in a row. He is the starting quarterback for Washington.
That's the thing, though. I can see him playing four just horrific games in a row because I've seen it before.
I can't. Not on this team. I can't with this team. I will, if you told me, if we can take health out of the equation, because any full season game, like, you know this, you bet a lot of unders because banking on health in the NFL is a big deal. But you told me he's playing 16, starting 16 out of the 17 games, and I say, or that, like, if you told me that was the thing and it health wasn't included, I would take that bet. I would take the bet that he's starting 16 of the 17 games.
All right. Antonio Gibson, my guy, J.D. McKissic, lead the backfield for the Washington Footballs. Mm-hmm. What do we make of Gibson in year two coming off this injury?
So I actually wrote up in that top five breakout, and what I started with is rookies and guys who don't qualify as, and like, they already broke out. Antonio Gibson was a rookie last year and technically already broke. Like, where is Antonio Gibson going to go up from here? But I brought him up as a concerning factor here is because while he had a respectable receiving line, 36 and 247, zero receiving touchdowns, is that you look at the fact that out of the running backs with a higher touchdown per carry percentage, there was only three. Gibson averaged 6.5%, which is a remarkably high number for a touchdown percentage per carry. Kamara, DeAndre Swift, and Dobbins were the higher. I would have never guessed Swift, but Kamara, Swift, and Dobbins were the only three that were higher. On top of that, you now have Fitzpatrick. And Fitzpatrick throwing to running backs, that's the concern for Fitzpatrick and Gibson. He doesn't throw to running backs. Actually, here, I want you to guess this for me. Since Fitzpatrick's been a starting quarterback for the last five seasons, so only games he started, you know, obviously we're not including the games where he wasn't out there. For games he started the last five seasons, how many receiving touchdowns do you think running backs have had behind him?
It's going to be like one or zero, but I'm not too concerned about receiving touchdowns from running backs. It's like the same reason that that I kind of fell in love with J.D. McKissic so often was, hey, this guy's going to get like double digit targets every single game. That's good enough for me.
Well, no, he's also not throwing to the running backs in general on top of that. It's also, I think the highest you had was Matt Forte with like 30 something yards, if I remember correctly off the, but the point being, there's only been two receiving touchdowns in the last 5 years.
That's crazy.
It was actually Bilal Powell and Cam Sims.
Cam Sims, really? That is a name.
Cam Sims is on. No, did I mistype it? Yeah, Cam Sims is on the freaking Washington. Who was I thinking of that I wrote? Nobody called me out for this in the comments. Bilal Powell, who is the one who is on the Jets?
Trenton Cannon.
It might. No, it wasn't Trenton Cannon. I have to go back and look and pull this up. Pull up the stat. Let's see. This is what happens when you write so much and you start mixing up names when you're talking about two teams at the same time. I can't believe nobody called me out for that. Now somebody's going to put it in the comments.
Maybe. No one cared.
Nobody cares because there's only two receiving touchdowns in the last 5 years with Fitzpatrick.
So we're worried about Gibson's overall upside because...
No, it's just I don't think Gibson's going to take another step forward. That was the entire point behind this. Is he's a great mid to high RB2. He's not going to break into the RB1 conversation.
So he's being drafted as number 12. So right on the turn. Right on the turn of running back one and running back two. That's the 12th running back off the board. That is one spot ahead of DeAndre Swift, two ahead of Joe Mixon, Dobbins, Josh Jacobs, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Miles Sanders, and that's behind like Eckler and Akers and Aaron Jones and Chubb and guys like that. I don't really... What sort of role does McKissic have this year? Because I feel like without Alex Smith, it's kind of non-existent.
Well, what I just brought about Fitzpatrick, yeah. It is kind of, yeah. And especially, like, I hope Washington is telling the truth and wants to get Gibson more involved in the passing game, which is just a weird thing because that's what everybody said about him coming out of college. Great receiver. How good is he as a runner? And then Washington basically flipped the entire script of what he did in college and treated him as primarily a runner with very little receiving ability. He has more receiving ability. He can offset my concerns if they use him more that way. But the compounding factor of Fitzpatrick and already not used that way, that carries over to McKissic. I don't think McKissic is going to see the value we saw last year where he kind of had that James White like RB3 and half and full point PPR. I wouldn't go back in on McKissic.
Do we worry that there's going to be like another Peyton Barber resurgence like we had for four games last year? Like Lamar Miller is on this team currently. Could he just randomly pop up and steal 60 carries? Like that's sort of the stuff that I'm worried about with Washington because it feels like they just do goofy things.
They just do this every single year. And then they brought in Jarrett Patterson, an undrafted free agent too, which is a lot of people thought who would get drafted and where people were a fan of. Yeah, I would say it's a mild concern, but I wouldn't put it as in like the years before this. They have Gibson now. Years before that, they didn't have a true answer at running back.
Wide receivers on this team, obviously, Terry McLaurin, our guy, scoring McLaurin. He's way up there. He's going as the 12th wide receiver off the board. Feel like that's even too low.
Too low?
Yeah.
I'm the opposite. I think it's too high.
Why is it too high? He looked, and it felt like he played on two broken ankles last year.
Look, you know this. I am one of the biggest McLaurin fans.
You know what? It doesn't sound like you are.
I can be a fan of somebody, but also not enjoy the situation as much as I did the year before. And that's really what it comes down to. As you look at the target share and the market share for Terry McLaurin last year and how many targets he had last year, I don't see how bringing in Curtis Samuel, now Logan Thomas is a thing, and drafting Dyami Brown, and Terry McLaurin's going to go up.
Yeah, but how much do you think Dyami Brown does this year? Honestly,
I think he could be a lesser version of Will Fuller. He's going to be a factor in three wide receiver set. I'm not saying for fantasy purposes you're drafting him. I don't want to care about Dyami Brown at all. I'm just saying 40 targets sounds reasonable. His targets don't even matter. What I'm coming down to is Terry McLaurin had 130. Let me pull it up. 134 targets in 15 games last year. I don't see him getting more, even with Fitzpatrick. That's the problem that I come down to. I think that Terry McLaurin could easily repeat what he did last year, but unless the touchdowns go up, four touchdowns, he was wide receiver 20. Even if you do points per game, he's wide receiver 17. So that's the thing. So it's not that I don't like Terry McLaurin. It's just you're going to draft him as a wide receiver one. That's essentially what you're doing at wide receiver 12. I'm not going to do that. I don't see him getting to that unless the touchdowns go up.
Unless Fitzmagic, which is quite possibly that he goes completely in the tank and that's the end of him. It just felt like 2020 for Terry McLaurin felt like the worst possible outcome for what his stats were going to be. It felt like he was hobbled every single week. Then he had Alex Smith.
That's fair.
Then he had Alex Smith and Dwayne Haskins throwing in the ball. At least Fitzmagic is going to try to force it to him, which I'm good with. So if I'm looking at a target share of, let's even like go conservatively here, 22%. If I run the numbers with a 22% market share in this offense, and I personally think it's going to be like 27 or 30%. It's going to be one of the highest in the league, with Curtis Samuel around, because I'm not sweating really anyone else besides Logan Thomas. There's enough to go around to get him at 30% when you know he's your best playmaker. That's going to leave him with like 145 targets, 93 catches, maybe 1,300 yards. Get lucky with some touchdowns, and it goes from like 4 to 9, and he's like the number 5 wide receiver.
I'd smash the under on those targets 1,000 times out of 1,000. I would obliterate the under on that, and I'll happily be wrong. I would love to be wrong, but what'd you say, 140?
Yeah, 140.
You know how many receivers had 140 plus last year? 7. Yeah, I just don't see him getting there.
All right, but how many had over, like, who was in, like, the 130 to 140 range?
130, 140, Robbie Anderson, Tyreek Hill, McLaurin, 134, Lockett, Cooper, Woods, and that's it.
All right, so you add an extra game, and it gets all those guys there.
Well, I mean, I'm not saying, I think that's part of it, too, and I think it'd be, as soon as I said the 134, in my mind, I read the comment of, like, well, is there extra game this year? Per game basis, whatever it is, market share. The market share, I don't see him getting that high. I take Amari Cooper before him. Who are the guys, you said 12. Who are the guys going right behind him?
Going right behind him right now, we got Mike Evans, Julio, which is crazy, Amari Cooper, Chris Godwin, Robert Woods, CeeDee Lamb, Adam Thielen, Kenny Galladay, Cooper Kupp.
See, I would take those first four and then put him right there with Robert Woods.
I
would take him before Robert Woods.
I would probably put Julio ahead of him, depending on how that situation plays itself out.
Cooper.
I'm not taking Cooper. I'm taking McLaurin for sure. Like, he just, the competition with Cooper, like, Cooper might not end up being the wide receiver one on his own team. That's the way that offense could
not
shake
unless
out.
He gets
that,
hurt.
That is now. It's not though. Lamb could take that leap and be better than Cooper this year. That wouldn't stun me. It would stun me if without injury anyone passed or even came close to McLaurin on Washington in the receiving game.
No, but the difference is I'm going to take Dak Prescott in that offense, and if CeeDee Lamb passes Amari Cooper, that means they both finished in the top 12.
I don't know if they're going to finish in the top 12. That seems pretty lofty, especially with just with the other options that are there, and Dak and Zeke taking that stuff for himself.
No, no, sure, but my point was if Lamb passes Cooper, and we covered Lamb in depth. I'm just saying they're both. If Lamb finishes ahead of Cooper, that means they both finish top 12. Because I just don't see Cooper falling outside of top 15. Cooper's not going to fall out of that. Cooper is too damn good. And I don't like Cooper for fantasy purposes, but there's the flip side of it. I don't like Fish. I love the player. Like talent wise, I like Cooper. I like them coming out of college. I just never wanted him because of the inconsistencies. But when he got matched up with Dak, he just needed Dak Prescott, and he's been great since Dak Prescott has been the quarterback for the Cowboys.
Are you going to draft any Curtis Samuel?
Yes.
Okay.
Curtis Samuel right now is going at a reasonable price. And I will definitely take Curtis Samuel. I don't think Curtis Samuel can put up the exact same numbers now being the number two with Fitzpatrick. He could probably take a step forward.
He is going in the Ja'Marr Chase, Corey Davis range at wide receiver.
I'll take Curtis Samuel over Davis, not over Chase.
Would you take, I mean, it's the same range as Michael Gallup as well. Would you go Gallup or Samuel?
Samuel.
Cole Beasley or Samuel?
Samuel.
Jamison Crowder or Samuel?
Samuel. Crowder's not going to be on the roster in a few days.
You really think that they're going to end up cutting him? They have a ton
they
of cap.
They save like $12 million.
Yeah, but they don't need to save any money is the thing. It's not like they're over the cap.
No, but why are you going to throw away money when you just drafted his replacement? Who could possibly be better as of right now?
Jake, you're talking about the Jets.
That's a good pushback. That's a good argument.
Logan Thomas, is he actually for real here?
As a player, sure, but it's tight end. We're always chasing last year's, and I don't. For where Logan Thomas is going now, I'm not going to chase last year's because you bring in Curtis Samuel. If Gibson does make some, put it this way, let's go back to your point about Terry McLaurin. Let's say I'm wrong. Let's say Terry McLaurin averages 28% market share for the season. Curtis Samuel is going to be a factor. Gibson's going to be a factor. I can just see where Logan Thomas is the one now left out because they have Curtis Samuel. So Logan Thomas is for real. Do I trust him repeating? I think that's my concern.
He had over 100
targets last year.
I ran the median projections, and again, that's just going to take like whatever the middle comes out as for people who don't know about that. And McLaurin actually got spit out at 23% market share to me. That left Logan Thomas at 15%, which would have him in the range of 58 catches on 89 targets, which is probably it's in like Evan Ingram territory. Like the Evan Ingram that we described a few minutes ago is that player.
Well, no, but the funny thing is because the Giants and doing this division, both of them are only one of five tight ends that have over 100 targets. Evan Ingram had over 100 targets last year.
Are you serious?
That's how bad he was. He had 109 targets last year.
That blows my mind.
Logan Thomas had 110. I just know because I was looking this up for the tight end piece that's coming out next week. That's how bad Evan Ingram was last year.
Washington's over-under is 8, by the way. Do you think people are betting the over or the under on the old footballs?
I think they're betting the under, and I hit the over myself.
They are betting the over. That has been juiced up to minus 140, one of the biggest juices this early in the preseason right now.
Well, that changes things a little bit. But you didn't ask me. I was going to say 7.5. I was going to be off by a half again.
Yeah, some of them are even, some of them are not. Okay, how about this? How about the Eagles, who we're going to be talking about right now? What do you think their over-under is?
5.5.
It is 6.5, and everyone is smashing the over. That's minus 155 to bet the over of 6.5, plus 125 to bet the under.
So
of
what you're telling me is that the bettors of the world have the entire division over 500 and everybody's winning a bunch of games.
Jake, I'm looking to get a lot of views on this video. Why do you think we started with this division?
Fair enough. Good call.
One of the most polarizing players going into fantasy drafts this year is Jalen Hurts. And I just truly think it depends on how far he falls. I think if you can get him at a discount, you absolutely take him. He has number one QB upside. He has a whole lot of downside to go along with it. But again, it's almost like with some of these players that you can take late. Can you construct a narrative and a path where you see them hitting the milestones that you want to get to? Maybe QB1 is probably not on the table. It would all really depend on the rushing at that point. But if you could get 80% of Lamar Jackson's 2019, I don't think that's crazy if he plays every game.
I agree with you. I have a lot of Jalen Hurts. I had him inside my top 10, which was one of the initial rage out fest for everybody in the comments about Jalen Hurts. Did you watch him throw the ball?
Like, okay, hold on. Are you required to read the comments? Because reading the comments is just the absolute worst thing you could ever do in anything.
No, I'm engaging. I actually answer 90% of the comments because I engage
the
reader. Real quick, Pat, for the first 11 weeks, because Nando was keeping track and did a whole shout out on our Slack on the inside, the first 11 weeks of the season, I had over 1,000 comments in the rankings column every single week.
Jake, this is why I started my own company, because I couldn't be bothered with Slack shout outs. I just couldn't go for it.
But Jalen Hurts, look, one of the things I said about Jalen Hurts was he draws a lot of similarities to Dak Prescott when Dak Prescott came out of college with more rushing upside. But the reason I brought up Dak Prescott is because this is what the sentence I said was. Imagine if Dak Prescott was treated coming out of college like what we knew Dak Prescott could be. And I'm not saying Jalen Hurts is going to be that, because that's the ultimate goal, is that he becomes that kind of passer. He looked shaky at best at times last year. Jalen Hurts looked awful. You know what else looked awful? And I still look awful as of today. Lamar Jackson. But we're talking fantasy. We're also talking about a team that thrust their quarterback, their rookie inexperienced quarterback, into a situation and a system that wasn't designed for him. Again, someone like Lamar Jackson. The Ravens spent the entire offseason, the 1 year, designing the offense around him. The Eagles have spent this entire offseason knowing Hurts is going to be their quarterback. You've seen the moves they made. You've seen the construction. You've seen the bringing in of Sirianni and what he wants to do with this offense. This offense is now designed for Jalen Hurts. I say all that also to say this. One more. Daniel Jones last year. Do you remember how many passing touchdowns Daniel Jones had last year? You don't even have to look up. 11. You take Daniel Jones' passing line. Just ask Daniel Jones. That's all you want Jalen Hurts to do as a passer. Be Daniel Jones from 2020. And you add in 800 rushing yards and 6 rushing touchdowns, which is very much in the realm of possibilities for Jalen Hurts. And he's QB12. The rushing is everything. That's why I put all that out there.
The average projection I have for him right now, 130 rushes, 738 yards, and 5 rushing touchdowns. That feels pretty conservative if he plays the 17 games. Although it does, the projections do have him as a much better passer than maybe he is. And maybe he just takes a leap forward. He's a good passer all of a sudden, or at least an average passer. Then you're doing pretty good here that I have him with 570 pass attempts for like 4,200 yards and 25 touchdowns. If that's going to be the case,
he's
going to be a top 5
QB1
quarterback. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But all you need, just conservative, 3,400 passing yards and 22 passing touchdowns. And with the 700 to 800 rushing, he's going to finish inside probably the top 6 or 7.
Yeah. I don't understand why people get so mad. And listen, if it's not for you and like your personal opinion is that like he's not going to stick the year, he's no good, then don't fucking draft him. Like, it's that easy. But yeah, you have to I understand that there's downside that goes along with this. Like, that's pretty obvious. But if you're
the downside is he's benched.
Yeah. Like, no one is saying that doesn't exist, but where he's going in drafts, and it hasn't got out of control like I thought it would. Like, I thought that he would be being drafted. Like, maybe Herbert is kind of quelling this a little bit, that everyone wants to get Herbert, and those same people would normally be the I want Jalen Hurts people.
Exactly. And it's the same people that, you know, can't separate, you know, the whole fantasy versus reality. It's the same people that want to draft Baker Mayfield as QB1 every single year. Like, Baker Mayfield's just not going to throw for 4,000 yards because of that offense. Like, we can... You need to separate sometimes like your perception of who the player is, the perception of what they do well, and the reality of what they do well and don't do well, and then understand that fantasy is a different ball game with some of these players.
Running backs in the Eagles offense. It's good that we ended with this team, because this should be a quick one, because I don't want to say it's pretty obvious. It's just there's not a whole lot of meat on the bone in this offense. Is Miles Sanders an actual workhorse running back? Will he ever be that?
No. He could have been, but I say no, not because of his talent. I say no because go back to the Eagles. What have they told us by watching this team? What have they told us by reading what they've done? Is that they don't trust Miles Sanders as a pass catcher? Is that the issues we saw last year partly due to Miles Sanders' play. And yes, part of it was the offense in flux and not having a great number one option at wide receiver and all this type of stuff. They went this offseason and said, you know what? We're not confident in either. They already had Boston Scott. They bring in more options. They go pick up Kerryon Johnson. Not that I wouldn't be surprised if he's not on the opening day roster.
But hey, you leave Kerryon needs to be on the roster. He and Ashley from Real World San Diego are having a baby very soon. So I need my girl Ashley to be taken care of here.
Oh, well, hey, look, I'm pretty sure the Kerryon's already made a decent chunk of money for just being drafted where he was in the NFL. But anyway, they drafted Kenny Gainwell, who is a pure pass catching running back, similar to like Boston Scott mold of those type of running backs, the Tariq Cohen's of the world. But you look at everything they've done, and yes, Sirianni's even said they want to throw to the running back more, but what they've done is we would assume that they don't feel great about Miles Sanders. I wouldn't be surprised if Miles Sanders gets kind of the Nick Chubb treatment, but isn't Nick Chubb.
Well, here's the one thing though. With Hurts at quarterback, I think it really helps out what Miles Sanders can do. Even if he has limited touches, it feels like his efficiency is going to be off the charts. That where he's going in drafts right now, is he running back number 18? Feels like he could definitely, like, would you rather have DeAndre Swift or Miles Sanders? Because I think I would gamble on Miles Sanders that he gets a bigger chunk of the touches than you might think. And even if he doesn't, I think the upside's about even here.
Yeah, I think they're very close. I actually, when the top five breakouts column tempered the expectations of DeAndre Swift, and that's another team, you know, you hear everything that's being said, and you've seen what Anthony Lynn has done in the past, and the talk about Jamal Williams, and the biggest thing, too, is DeAndre Swift is an exceptional player. I love DeAndre. He was in my tier one of running backs. Don't love the situation. Again, also because who's the better pass blocker? Jamal Williams is one of the best pass blocking running backs in the NFL. So that team, I think, Swift and Sanders are actually in the same tier for me. So where you're talking about the value there, if one far exceeded it and finished inside the top 10, I think Sanders, if he gets his passing game back, could do it more than Swift. I don't think Swift is nearing 20 touches a game where I could see Sanders getting back to that.
No, I just like Miles Sanders' big play potential, and with Hurts drawing so much attention from the defense that there will be lanes. And we even saw it towards the end of last year when Hurts was playing. Like, you'd see Miles Sanders just break off these huge chunk plays. Like, if he has daylight, he's gone. And I think that's really where people get drawn in with him.
Yeah, and the other big thing, too, is Jared Goff doesn't throw to his running backs. So that's kind of it. And I know he hasn't had the best pass catchers behind him, but it's just also the last. Actually, do you know where he ranks? I'll let you guess, Pat. The last 2 years, where does Jared Goff rank throwing to running backs out of the qualifiers of at least 100 pass attempts?
Can you at least tell me how many qualifiers there are?
57.
I'm going to say 51st.
57th.
Oh, shit. Oh,
yes. Dead last the past 2 years. And even if you want to go back before that, when Todd Gurley was in Todd Gurley prime there, he was outside the top 80, and there was only like 100 and some qualifiers. He was down in the bottom 20.
Wide receivers. It feels like there is fantasy gold to be mined from this team somewhere. I got to figure out who it is. Is it DeVonta Smith? They did spend enough draft capital on him that you'd think it would be him. Is it Reagor, who they spent the draft capital on last year? My guy, Greg Ward. Remember when he was a thing for like 3 weeks? 2 years ago at the end of the year?
I mean, I remember, but I'm saying no to him. I'm saying yes to Reagor and DeVonta Smith. DeVonta Smith.
What about your other guy? Oh, isn't Travis Fulgham ODU as well?
Yeah, well, you remember this. I was the quickest to say get on board, and then that was the quickest. There's perfect example. I love you, Travis Fulgham, but there's some wide receivers who aren't equipped to be the number one. As soon as defense has treated him as the number one, he's a wide receiver three in the NFL. I would love if he could be more. I 100% would love if he could be more. But
hold on. How does this look? Let's say they play a three wide receiver set. Who is on the field for this team?
Reagor, Smith, and probably my guess would actually be Ward.
Ward in the slot?
Depending on what they're doing.
Or Ward on the outside?
Ward in the slot. I think you see DeVonta Smith pushed outside. DeVonta Smith is going to be inside and out. They'll move him around.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. The projected market share right now of targets that I have is Smith at 24%, Reagor at 16%, Ward at 9%, Fulgham at 7%. Because as we are recording this, Ertz is still on the team, so he's going to suck up some of that too with Goddard.
Yeah, I was going to say Fulgham and Ward would be the ones that kind of switch back and forth depending on what they want to do. But the biggest point being is the Reagor Smith is walking into 100 plus targets. Rager is going to see that as well. And the big thing about Rager is that I brought that up earlier in the show and said, you know, I brought it up the Henry Ruggs comparison too, is like both these guys were miscast, asking them to play primarily outside. They've already talked that Rager is going to spend some time in the slot moving around this year more, but also guys that had no legitimate threat next to them. Like Nelson Aguilar became a thing, but he was playing out of the slot because Bryan Edwards got hurt. So you push Rager outside, both being rookies, both being asked to take number one corners and number one attention on the defenses. Let them grow into year two. Let them not be, you know, double and triple teamed and bracketed and stuff like that. And I think Rager and Ruggs are terrific values this year. Where is Rager going? I would be guessing he's going in the Shepherd range.
Actually, no. Maybe, let's see, Rager. Yeah, yes, actually. He is going 75th amongst
there you go.
Wide receivers.
Behind DeVonta Smith, by the way, right?
Well, yeah, but here's Smith, the thing. DeVonta Smith is going at like number 53 among wide receiver. Like, he's way better than everyone else. Like, he's going behind Mike Williams and T.Y. Hilton and Marvin Jones and Henry Ruggs. Like, just based on his opportunity alone, he should be going like 20 spots higher.
Yeah, he's walking into 100 targets. This is another one. I'm going to have a lot of Rager and Smith this year, those as of right now.
Listen, if the projections are to be believed, it is Smith that you want, because at a 24% market share and what this offense is going to be, don't forget, this defense isn't very good. No matter how much like it seems like there's players that you know on it, they're not any good. So they're going to be giving up a ton of points in a division with two offenses that are pretty good. You're going to have to play them twice. That there's going to be a lot of catch up on the go, which is great for the Hurts rushing yards. But if it is Smith right now and he does get around a 22, 23, 24, 25% market share, I mean, he could have like 140 targets in this offense.
Yeah. He could, but yeah, and I would agree with you. I would take Smith 10 times out of 10 over Jalen Rager, but at their cost, I would take both of them on the same team because Rager's costing you nothing to them. Not that I want to do that, but where Rager's going for cost-wise, I'll take the chance. Like, what if he's the guy that breaks out in year two and Smith struggles as a rookie? Like, he wouldn't be the first to do it. I don't think he will, but he wouldn't be the first. Oh my God, I forgot. They still have Jordan Howard on this damn team. What are they doing?
Oh yeah. Jason Huntley, Elijah Holyfield, Kerryon Johnson. You got names here. All the way down the depth chart.
Huntley and Holyfield aren't going to be on the team.
Who is the leading rusher on this team? It's Hurts, right?
Oh no, it's still Sanders. Sanders can, even if he's not involved in the passing game.
Does Sanders get to 1,000 yards?
Yeah. I'd put, if you asked me for an over-under, I'd put it at like 1049.5.
Well, now I want to see what it is. Receiving yards, rushing yards, touchdowns. They don't have the rushing props out yet. Bummer, DraftKings Sportsbook. They know, because if they put them out right now, that everyone's just going to smash unders and wait for a preseason injury and you get paid out on your bet right away. So you're probably a bit pensive on putting those ones out. Let's talk tight ends here. Ertz is still on the team, like I mentioned, but do you gamble on Goddard now in case that Ertz isn't going to be there, or are you just kind of down on Goddard?
Where do you have Goddard's? Because the drafts I'm going in, I don't know. I don't really trust where Goddard's going. What's his ADP right now?
Dallas Goedert the last week is number 11 behind Evan Ingram, behind Rob Gronkowski, a spot ahead of Kyle Pitts and Johnny Smith.
Nah, I was going to say if Goddard was like tight end 15 or 16, that doesn't sound like a big group difference. I probably would have done that, but it's not just 11, but it's also 11 where 11 is going in drafts. I'd rather it's Higbee's behind him, right? I'm assuming.
Yeah, Higbee's number 19.
Yeah, I'd rather wait on Higbee, Firkser, my boy Adam Trautman. Like, I would just rather wait on those.
But here's the thing though, like tight end number 11 is going in the 14th round.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Okay, well then, no, okay, well then I'll take Goddard there. Yeah, I would take Goddard there. I was thinking tight end 11 was going in like the 10th.
No. Pick number highest he's going is going to be like, sometimes he'll go at like pick 100. Most times he'll go at pick like 129, like 140, that kind of thing.
Well, yeah, I'll definitely do that.
So I guess, I mean, with a lot of these back end guys, it really depends on the draft that you're currently in. That if you play with Eagles fans, maybe he goes super highly. If you play just people who value tight ends or whatever it might be. Or if you draft the day that Zach Ertz gets traded or cut, then Goddard's just going to shoot up. And then he'll eventually, you know, come back down to where his resting point should be. But, you know, some of the stuff is just so dependent on when you draft and who you draft with.
Of course, it's always the biggest thing. Like I said, maybe I'm doing too many dynasty startups, but like tight end 10, 11 is usually off the board by that 10th, 11th round. So That's why I said I don't trust the drafts I was in. So there you go.
Yeah, and listen, even some of the ADPs that you see right now, there are so few drafts on the go at this point of time, at the end of May, that or at the beginning of June, whatever the fuck day it is, that, you know, this isn't the greatest info in the world, but it does give you a relative like starting point.
Well, and there's some sites out there too that'll have like their rookies are just populating the hell out of it because those are the only drafts going on in the rookies draft. So then you see like ADP and it's like best available. There's just like 10 straight rookies and you're in the fifth round. I'm like, what the hell's going on?
Yeah. So yeah, you take all the ADPs with a grain of salt right now, but at least from what I've seen so far, that's kind of where he's been going at, you know, high end, you know, 10th round, low end, like 14th round. And I do think if Ertz isn't there, the potential for I don't want to say a big breakout season.
Ertz technically wasn't there last year.
He wasn't, but Goddard was banged up for a lot of last year, too.
That's true.
So if you get a healthy Goddard, no Ertz, pencil him in for, like I said, like a 15% market share. If this offense does have to pass a little bit, that, you know, he could have like a Bush League Mark Andrews type season.
I could just see a Mark Andrews type season, because if you told me no Ertz and Goddard's 100%, you can make the argument that the pecking order is Smith, Goddard, and then Rager.
Yeah, I could most definitely see that if Ertz wasn't around. That would put him like in the Noah Fant Hawkinson territory, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Can we get Noah Fant a good quarterback? No, yeah. We're not doing that. We're gonna save this for another day.
Save it for another day. We had to run through the teams. But we did speed it up, so I'm very proud of us for doing that. What do you got coming out at theathletic.com? Like next week or so?
Yeah, the top 10 wide receiver breakouts and then the top 5 tight end breakouts. So there you go, especially because we don't care about baseball on this show.
No, we do not, unless you go to ftndaily.com. Use promo code MAYO to get yourself a discount on the MLB package. There is fantasy baseball picks and bets on Mayo Media Network. I am not a part of that show, but I have some great people who do baseball. And if you do want baseball picks every single day, it runs 6 days a week, Monday through Saturday. It's like 15 minutes every single day. It covers bets, it covers DraftKings, and it covers Prize Picks and the best props of the day. If you do want to check out baseball, we do have baseball content. Fuck, we have hockey content still going on through the playoffs. Just it doesn't involve me, which, you know what? Some people might prefer, Jake.
You know what? I know Meanie is amazing at hockey. So
yeah, if basically you just followed Meanie's shots on goal props for this season and you bet, let's say, $10 on every single one, you'd be up like $1,200, I think.
I know. I actually stopped because I was cursing him for like 4 straight days. But yeah, I was still overall, even with that jokes aside, like, yeah, I made some money off Chris Meany's shot props. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, so
including the playoffs.
Yeah, so fantasy hockey picks and bets. You can check it all out on Mayo Media Network. Subscribe to the channel. Please smash the like on the way out. We're going to become more efficient in doing these division previews. So for myself, at the PME on Twitter. For Jake, at All In Kid on Twitter. I'm Pat Mayo. Thank you all for watching. I'll see you next time.
Pat Mayo Experience!